The following is an exclusive sports presentation of Extra Sports 1300.
Next, I'd like to introduce...
Throw your hands in the air if you's a true player.
Southern Colorado, it's time for your live and local sports talk show.
That boy is good.
Good and terrible.
I think you two dudes are going to become real homies.
Where do we find these guys?
Oh, man, I hate those guys.
Here are your hosts, Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden, with the godfather of Colorado Springs Sports Radio, Wheels.
Good Thursday to you. Welcome to Drive Time Sports. Ryan Kaufman coming your way from Backe's Bar and Grill off of Briargate. Backe's Bar and Grill, whether it be here in Colorado Springs or up the road in Monument, it is our Thursday night home, and you should definitely make it yours as well. And I want to start today, obviously, with the World Series, and you heard it right here on Extra Sports 1300, the Houston Astros getting up early and never looking back against the Los Angeles Dodgers. 5-1 is the final first World Series in the history of the Houston Astros franchise. And then that's great. I want to give full credit to the Astros. I mean, and when people say that, they immediately sound like they're going to take away credit, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. But I honestly feel like the Astros could be a team that's here to stay and not a team that's just going to jump up 1 year and then disappear. I think that the Astros are definitely built for the long run, and that's the way to win in Major League Baseball if you can. Get those young guys. It's like in the NFL. Really, the way to win, the best way to win if you can, is to get a quarterback on his rookie deal so you don't blow out your salary cap paying a quarterback, and then surround him with enough talent, spend money there, and that's how a lot of teams have won and gone to Super Bowls. In baseball, there's no salary cap, so obviously a lot of teams, like the Dodgers, their opponent last night, are going to be able to retool on a year-in, year-out basis. Houston doesn't really fit that mold. They're not poor, but they're certainly not on the same level as the L.A. teams, the Chicago teams, the New York teams. So I think a ton of credit has to go to the Astros, absolutely. I have two issues, though, last night with last night's game. One, from an entertainment perspective, how much of a letdown was that? We have one of the most compelling and exciting World Series in years, just in terms of the games. I don't think anything in recent memory can beat the intrigue of the Cubs potentially ending their curse, or the Red Sox when they did theirs a few years ago. But in terms of a game-by-game basis, the entertainment value and the storylines and everything else, it's as compelling as any fall classic that I have seen in recent memory. And then last night happens, and you never really felt like the Dodgers were going to get back into that. I really never felt that way. But it is what it is. At the end of the day, unless you're the Marlins in 97, or you're the Diamondbacks in 2001, the Blue Jays in 93, we don't really remember how the World Series ends. We just remember the teams and who ended up coming out on top. So as time progresses, we'll get over the fact that last night did not really live up to the expectation of a Game 7. Here's the other part, and here's where it's going to sound like I'm taking away credit from the Astros. If you are Dave Roberts, and you are going to throw Clayton Kershaw 4 innings, why don't you just start him? Because Jim Rome said it on his Sports Minute right before we went on air, and I agree with him. Hindsight is 20/20, and I'm not trying to sit here and say that I believed yesterday that Clayton Kershaw should start this game. But doesn't Dave Roberts at least have an idea that maybe Kershaw is good for X amount of innings? When I was expecting, I fully expected to see Clayton Kershaw last night, but I expected to see him in a high leverage situation, you know, coming into the game to get a big out, maybe pitch a big inning to get it to Jansen or something like that. I did not expect to see him for four innings last night. And Dave Roberts had to have had some indication that Kershaw was going to be able to throw that. So my point is not that I'm sitting here with hindsight and saying, what a stupid move. I'm just saying, doesn't Dave Roberts know that? Doesn't Dave Roberts have a plan? Now, he said after the game, because a lot of people were saying, why Alex Wood? Basically, the biggest question is, why Yu Darvish? But many people before the game said, why not Alex Wood? And Dave Roberts immediately after the game said he wasn't comfortable throwing Alex Wood as a starter when he had thrown just a couple of games before. And my point is, look at Alex Wood. How many innings did he throw? Can he not give you those at the front end? The point was that everyone knew that it was going to be tough to have a good start to the game with Yu Darvish on the mound. Now, do we expect L.A. to get to McCullers? Yes, I believe that they were going to. And especially when McCullers started hitting everybody, I thought absolutely the Dodgers would be able to touch him up. And I'm sure Dave Roberts felt that way too. But if you're saying, I'm going to go with Yu Darvish because I expect my offense to get us out to an early lead, I think that is bordering on between having faith in your team and being, you know, taking something for granted. If you're going to throw Alex Wood for a pair of innings, if you're going to throw Clayton Kershaw for four, you knew Yu Darvish wasn't going to give you seven. You knew Yu Darvish was going to give you about that amount of time. Why not just throw Kershaw or Wood, and then you don't have Darvish? Think about how different that game would have been last night. You go Kershaw for four, then you could go Alex Wood to piggyback off of him. Heck, maybe you only throw Kershaw three. You go Alex Wood two, now you're halfway through the game, and you've definitely put your best foot forward. Then you can go tomorrow, and then you can go to Jansen for the six-out save. Again, full credit to Houston. It's hard to say that and then say all that. But I do believe that the Astros were the better team in the series, and they sure as heck made better decisions than the Los Angeles Dodgers did. And all the second-guessing of Dave Roberts, I don't believe it's all 2020 hindsight criticism, Monday morning quarterbacking. It is to a certain extent. But again, to me, if you're Dave Roberts and you think Kershaw can go four, why not first through the fourth? And maybe that game could have been different. Maybe it couldn't have. But that doesn't mean, just because they lost doesn't mean it was the wrong decision. It was the wrong decision because it proved out as the game progressed that Kershaw and Wood had more left than maybe we all thought. But Dave Roberts should have known that. But all that being said, the Astros are the World Series champions, and we'll remember. That's the great thing about this. Do you dwell, unless you're a fan of the team that loses, do you dwell on the fact that the Indians lost? Of course you don't. You're happy that the Cubs won, or maybe you're upset that the Cubs won because you don't like their fan base, or you think that the Cubs should stay miserable and without World Series for 100, 200 years maybe. But at the end of the day, as long as you don't have an anti-interest in the Cubs or a pro-Indians viewpoint, you give full credit to the Cubs and you celebrate the Cubs, and that's what we are going to do as we move forward. But right now, in the glow of last night's game, I can't help but criticize the Dodgers and Dave Roberts more than I could give praise to the Astros, but that will absolutely change as time progresses. Mark correctly pointing out on the text line, first World Series victory, second World Series. First American League World Series, because they were in the National League when they lost to the Chicago White Sox. I don't know that I made that mistake, but welcome viewpoint from Mark, to be sure. So, do I have it wrong? I mean, are we talking? am I being too critical of the Dodgers? Am I benefiting from hindsight too much? Or do you agree with me that as you're watching that game and you see Kershaw go one inning, go two innings, go three innings, go four innings, and you're saying, why didn't he start the game? I think that it's fair to criticize Dave Roberts as long as we don't hold on to those too long and we move on and celebrate the Astros. That's what the parade's for. Once the parade goes down whatever street they hold it on in Houston, that's when it turns to appreciation and full credit given to the champion. But right now it's about second guessing. It's about blame, which is the business that we are in. Brock Osweiler spoke. And I got to tell you, Brock Osweiler, much better soundbite than Trevor Siemian. Certainly, Chris cannot do any PB&J stuff with Brock Osweiler. He is a very compelling speaker. He talks the talk. That is absolutely for sure. I do worry with Brock Osweiler that it's a little bit fake. It's a little bit, what would you like me to say? Okay, I'm going to say that. But regardless, he's way more entertaining to listen to than Trevor Siemian. And he is full of sound bites, of T-shirt ideas. Yesterday, ball security is job security. That's what he said yesterday. Ball security is job security. And you know what? It is catchy, and it's not totally wrong. It really isn't. Because the frustration with Trevor Siemian is that he turned the football over. Here's the stat you need to know. Broncos, 3-1 when they have 1 or 0 interceptions. They are 0-3 when they have 2 or more. Pretty black and white to me. But here's the thing, though. Brock Osweiler, as bad as he was last year for the Texans were still 3-1 when Brock threw 2 or more picks. Go figure. It's a little bit of a weird stat. Certainly does it goes against normal convention, but it goes to show a little bit that you can have turnovers and still be able to win football games. In fact, teams have won with Brock Osweiler throwing multiple interceptions. To me, the biggest thing about this quarterback change and what needs to happen moving forward, less Brock, less quarterback. That's the key. That's the key first and foremost. Yes, the interceptions are something. Yes, you have, yes, ball security, job security, all that stuff. I'm not saying that's not the case. But why was Trevor Siemian throwing more interceptions? Was it just because he was making poor decisions? No. You have a higher probability of making poor decisions when you are given more opportunity to make those poor decisions. Right? You're given more opportunities to screw up. Law of averages says you're going to screw up more. And that, to me, is what needs to change with the Denver Broncos and the quarterback position, regardless of who it is. I mentioned Texans 3-1 last year when Brock threw multiple interceptions. Here's another stat that shows you where the thing. When Brock won with the Texans last year, he threw the ball about 33 times a game on average. When the Texans lost, Brock was throwing nearly 40 times a game. That's a difference. That's a decent size difference. You wanted to go for an even more decent size? How about Trevor Siemian? When Trevor Siemian and the Broncos win games this year, Trevor Siemian threw it less than 29 times a game. When the Broncos have lost, and thus Trevor Siemian has lost, they have thrown the ball over 40 times a game. That is a huge difference. That is 12 more passes per game that Trevor Siemian was throwing the football and thus turning the football over more. To me, that will be the key for when Brock does start on Sunday and moving forward for however long he's going to have the gig. The Broncos cannot abandon the running game as much as they have. Just like C.J. Anderson deserved the lion's share of the credit for the offensive successes, not running C.J. Anderson is an equal culprit or maybe even more so the reason why the Broncos are losing games. You got the 3-1 when Trevor Siemian threw zero or one interceptions. How about this stat? The Broncos have not lost this season when C.J. Anderson carries it 20 or more times. Have not lost. At least with Trevor Siemian, he's thrown multiple interceptions, or he's thrown less than multiple interceptions, one or zero, and the Broncos have still lost a game in that situation. The Broncos have not lost when C.J. Anderson gets 20 or more carries. In three of the four losses where he hasn't carried it 20 times, he has rushed at or above his season yards per carry average. Basically, he had less than 20 carries for no reason. If C.J. Anderson is averaging 4.5 yards a carry, you give him the football more. And the Broncos, specifically Mike McCoy, for some inexplicable reason, have not done that. They have abandoned the running game way too soon. The Los Angeles loss a couple weeks ago is case in point. With the Kansas City game, you feel like situation's a little bit more dire. You got to take to the air. That's why C.J. Anderson had his productivity limited, or at least his touches limited. Okay, I can forgive once. But L.A., as Vance Joseph said, the night of and the day after, that was a two-possession game. You don't panic when it's a two-possession game and abandon your running game. Abandon the thing that you knew. We all knew this coming into the season. It was not going to be about Trevor Siemian getting better. We knew he didn't have much room to grow. The ceiling was already potentially reached by Trevor Siemian. What we thought that needed to be better and thought would be better is the running game. And it is. It is if you let it work for you. And especially against the Eagles' pass rush, they are one of the best teams in the NFL in pass defense. And their pass rush is a big reason why. They are okay when it comes to the run game. There's no good way to put this. The Eagles are really, really good, and it's going to be difficult to beat them in any phase of the game. But if you want an opportunity, if you're a Bronco fan, it's in the running game. You're not, Brock Osweiler is not, even if he throws zero picks, he is not going to make enough plays in the passing game to beat the Eagles. But you can beat the Eagles in the passing game. Remember this notion that we've been kicking around for, I don't know, years? Run, play action pass, bootlegs. This is what the Broncos offense was supposed to be for the last couple of years. And for some reason this year, last year it was due to injuries in the running game and also due to an even worse offensive line. The offensive line is better than they were last year. Make no mistake about that. They're still not very good, but they're better than they were last year. The reason why they've abandoned the running game so much in games this year, I can't explain that. Maybe someone else can. I can, because I see obvious running downs and they don't do it, and then it's 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1 on the goal line and they're trying to run. The play calling has been as big of an issue as anything on this Broncos team. So, yes, Brock Osweiler protecting the football is the most important thing that he can do. And if he turns the football over, he will greatly decrease the Broncos' chances of winning, as the record would indicate. But if the Broncos are going to get back on track on Sunday, or the Sunday after that against the Patriots, or even the Sunday after that against the Bengals, they have got to stick to the running game. Stick to it. Let C.J. Anderson set up Brock Osweiler. Less of Brock, the better. More of C.J., this season has proven out, the better. And that's what the key is for the Broncos this week and moving forward.
On the air at 1300 on your AM dial. On the internet at xtrasports1300.com. This is Extra Sports 1300.
Drive Time Sports live at Back East Bar and Grill. Get in here if you want to come check out Thursday Night Football or the Avs or anything else on the televisions tonight, because this place is filling up quick. We are not even close to done dissecting the move Vance Joseph has made to put Brock Osweiler as the starting quarterback of the Denver Broncos, and who better to discuss it with than the Denver-based sports columnist for the Gazette, Paul Klee. Paul, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hey, Ryan. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, especially after the Nuggets last night, right? That's what Nikola Jokic is supposed to be.
Yeah, that was some action ball. That was the best game they've played so far this year. I think we're seeing right now Jamal Murray. You know, Jamal Murray's starting to come into form the last three games. He's played awfully well lately. So you hope that's the sign of brighter things to come.
Yeah, we will see when they play Miami on Friday. Obviously, Broncos, tip of everyone's tongue as per usual. My question to you is, Paul, is Brock truly a better option than Trevor Siemian, or is this making a change for change's sake?
You know, I think this is how I would phrase it. I think Brock is the necessary option at this moment. I think you saw Trevor over the last three or four games. He wasn't anything like the game manager that, you know, we saw last year, which he wasn't great, but they were a missed field goal away from being in the playoffs. So it looked to me like Trevor Siemian was seeing ghosts. You know, he was afraid of where the next hit was going to come from, and it was kind of like when you get the yips. I've had the yips a couple times on the golf course, and it's just something you can't get rid of. It's the worst thing ever. And I think they had to make a change, because you don't have a prayer with Trevor Siemian going into Philly. That's kind of how I view it.
Vance Joseph tried to spin things and say that this is better for Trevor Siemian as well. I'm trying to find the evidence of a young quarterback getting pulled and then eventually getting his job back. Do you think that Trevor Siemian now has somewhat of a future in Denver, or are we seeing the end of his tenure?
I think if it's a future, and I put that at a much smaller percentage than I think most probably would, it's a future as the backup here. I think if Trevor Siemian is your backup, you're not terrified. You know, you're probably not thinking you're going to win a couple playoff games, but that's a guy that you could probably lean on for a few games before your starter comes back, because he's smart and he picks things up and all that. I did actually believe Vance when he said that. And the reason is, I think if you had continued to put him out there when he was pressing like he was, and it just seemed like he was rushing everything. You know, those interceptions were first and second down, and those are real killers. I think if you continue to do that, I think you could just kind of, you know, break a guy, because he just doesn't have it. It's pretty clear the last couple of games. So I think this is a move that they had to make, because, you know, it's slipping away here. There's not a lot of time left to correct this thing because of the way the Chiefs have pulled ahead of everybody in the West. And you can't afford to lose too many of these. I just made some travel plans for the rest of the season, and these guys are on the road a ton. So if you don't pick off a couple of these, you're in big trouble. So I think they had to make this move.
How much culpability does the coaching staff have? Because I threw this out earlier. Trevor Siemian throws the ball 12 more times in losses than he does wins. The Broncos are unbeaten when C.J. Anderson runs the ball 20 or more times, yet that doesn't happen all the time. So, yes, ultimately Trevor Siemian is the one to take the fall, but is he taking the fall very much for the coaching staff's ineptitude?
I just think that the situation they're in, I think the coaching staff has to assume a lot of the responsibility for this. And I think that, you know, one thing I appreciate about Vance Joseph and working around him now for, you know, 5 or 6 months, he's a very sincere guy. And he will pretty much, it's relative to most football coaches who are sworn to secrecy at birth, he's pretty open about certain things. And when he was introduced and he said, this is also a great situation because it's a championship team, I think he put a lot of expectations on this first season. So if that's what he saw then, and they haven't experienced any massive injuries to alter kind of the course of their season, then so far this season has been a huge bust in terms of Vance Joseph's debut season here. And I don't think that's overselling it. I think they have to take a lot of the blame and the responsibility for this simply because of what he said when he was hired.
Paul Klee, Denver-based sports columnist for the Gazette, joining us here on Drive Time Sports. I hear what Brock Osweiler says, and when it comes to his relationship with his teammates, and I don't know, it's just something about him. He just feels very much like, what do you want me to say, and I will say that. So I'm curious, for someone who's at Dove Valley as much as you are, what have you been able to glean as far as the way that the teammates deal with Brock Osweiler? Do they love him as much as Brock says they do?
Well, that's a great way to put it, and it's funny you say that because, see, I have to be a Brock fan. It's in my blood. He was going to be a Gonzaga Bulldog basketball player. He was committed to the great Gonzaga University. So he's obviously a very intelligent guy. But here's where I come down on the PR aspect. He's talking yesterday, and I'm looking at him thinking, this dude hasn't been playing football for the last 18 months elsewhere. He's been going to public relations classes because it was just like straight out of a textbook from him. Everything, every cliche you could throw against the wall, he used it. It was so heavy that I turned to Patrick Smyth, the PR director with the Broncos, and I said, you better be careful because he's going to take your job pretty soon. And I think he has a comfort with himself, and a lot of it's really cheesy. It's just super cheesy stuff, but the guys like him. And, you know, I've changed my view on what it means for a locker room to like a guy. I think they like guys who win because that means they get paid. So if Brock wins on Sunday, they're going to really like Brock a whole lot more. I think that's pretty much the bottom line in professional sports.
I am getting the Ball Security is Job Security t-shirts printed up as we speak. If you'd like to Shark Tank style, I will offer you 5% of my business for $100,000 if you're interested. Paul Klee of the Gazette joining us here on Drive Time Sports. You bring up your Zags. Before I let you go, 18th for a team that finished 37-2 last year. What do you think?
Oh, it's extraordinary, man. We lost our entire team for the third year in a row. So if he gets us back to the NCAA tournament for, I think, 19th straight year, it's time to build a Mark Few statue outside the kennel because this is going to be extraordinary. I think we lost 89% of our scoring last year. So to be in the top 25, I'm ecstatic.
All right, we'll take it. Paul Klee, we'll continue to follow you on Twitter at @ByPaulKlee. Read you in print and online at Gazette.com. Paul's write-ups right before the Broncos kick off. That is where it's at if you want really good Broncos analysis. Paul, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk very soon.
Thank you, Ryan. I enjoyed it. Thanks.
That will do it for the show. Make sure you stay tuned. Coming up at 6:30, we'll have Football Night in the Springs, Mesa Ridge and Pine Creek. We'll talk to you then here on Extra Sports 1300.